found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
I let go of trying to control things that I had no control over, and that helped me find peace of mind.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
I was constantly stressed and worried. Now I approach each day with joy and gratitude.
In Al-Anon, families and friends of alcoholics find new ways to heal from the effects of a loved one's drinking.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. For information, call 1-866-200-0033 or visit alanon.org/hope.
We got a right to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story. We got a right to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story. We got a right to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story. Tell the world.
We're facing hatred, breaking down the walls.
Tell the world.
Standing together as the symbols fall.
Tell the world.
Raising our voices for one and all.
Together we're on our way. We got a right to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story.
We got a right
to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story. Tell the world.
Showing respect for every human soul.
Tell the world.
We're reaching out to young and old.
Tell the world.
Singing will heal us, it will make us whole.
Together we're on our way. We got a right to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story. We got a right to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story. Tell the world.
We have a legacy to leave behind.
Tell the world.
A better future for our kids to find.
Tell the world.
We're not afraid so we can speak our minds.
Together we're on our way. We got a right to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story. We got a right to the tree of life and all that love can give us. We're not afraid to shine our light. We're here to tell our story. Tell the world. 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 Tell the world.
WRCT, Pittsburgh.
It's been a long time since you've touched the hand and the heart of that special someone. You're not alone. This is WRCT Pittsburgh's Radio Automation Service. Stay tuned for more tracks from our radio and record library. It's been a long time since you've touched the hand and the heart of that special someone. You're not alone. This is WRCT Pittsburgh's Radio Automation Service. Stay tuned for more tracks from our radio and record library.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, an early October survey showed that while 60% of those polled knew that the Build Back Better legislative package was $3.5 trillion, only 10% had any sense of what was in it. That is many things, but preeminently a failure of news media. The demonstrably harmful effect of months of reporting that never failed to note the presumed costs of a plan to address devastating national crises of healthcare, climate, and infrastructure, but that only rarely troubled itself to explain in any detail what those plans would mean. Despite that, polls still show majorities of Americans supporting the legislative package. We'll talk about seeing and pushing through anti-democratic disinformation with Karen Dolan, director of the Criminalization of Race and Poverty Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Also on the show, a New York Times column by an editorial board member begins, quote, "Facebook has endured one of the most punishing stretches of corporate coverage in recent memory, exposing its immense power and blithe disregard for its deleterious impacts. But none of it really matters," close quote. Headlined, "Face It, Facebook Won't Change Unless Advertisers Demand It," the piece is ostensibly meant as a sober assessment of the difficulty of exacting change from a company while it's making money. But given the role of journalism in telling folks what is possible, the Times espousing the notion that Congress, Facebook whistleblower Frances Haugen, and the press are all, quote, but bumps in the road, close quote, reads less as a dry-eyed evaluation than as a call to throw up our hands in the face of an unwinnable contest. Our guest understands media structure, yet still advocates for policy change. We'll hear from Tim Carr, Senior Director of Strategy and Communications at the group Free Press. That's coming up. We'll get right to it. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. Things are up in the air as we record on October 28th, but it seems that paid family and medical leave, among other things, has been cut from the Build Back Better legislative package, which today's New York Times describes as considerably more modest than initially envisioned. A recent Washington Post editorial, "Build Back Better is Getting Worse and Worse," said that Democrats are, quote, "at risk of producing legislation that is so compromised and slapdash that it would amount to a tragic missed opportunity," close quote. Poignant words that would land differently had not the Post and the rest of the elite press corps delivered months of coverage on the safety net, climate, and infrastructure package that so overwhelmingly focused on its costs over its contents that proponents, including Senator Bernie Sanders, were driven to produce a webinar called "What's in the Damn Bill?" Joining us now to talk about Build Back Better and the struggles around it is Karen Dolan. She's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, where she directs the Criminalization of Race and Poverty Project. She joins us now by phone. Welcome back to Counterspin, Karen Dolan.
Thank you, Janine. Wonderful to be here.
Well, I admit my heart sank to see the Times this morning. Biden announces $1.85 trillion framework for climate and safety net plan, both because it represents such a material reduction in what was looking like a plan to begin to confront this country's climate and human health crises, not to mention to respond to the public will to do that, but then also because it seems like media are going to continue to reduce this plan about people to a price tag. What are your broad thoughts today about how the White House and lawmakers have so far handled what is, once folks know about it, a very popular plan?
I agree with you, Janine, that the media has not done its job, and by not doing its job has done a great disservice to the American people. So you look at the latest polls where about 35% of people feel that there's anything in the bill that will help them, when in reality, even this pared-down bill will help nearly everyone who isn't a millionaire and billionaire. And millionaires and billionaires aren't going to be hurt very much. Additionally, the investments in this bill are more than paid for. In fact, they go to pay down the deficit because two senators have pared down the ways in which the dollars could be spent to help the rest of us. So there's actually still an awful lot of good in this package, but you wouldn't know it from headlines like you announced today from the New York Times or the Washington Post, or as you rightly said, over the summer. I think that the Progressive Caucus, Bernie Sanders, some of the lawmakers, even Joe Biden have tried to make clear the ways in which the proposals in the bill will help most of us, and especially poor and low-income children and people of color who were most adversely affected by the pandemic. But as you say, the concentration has been on the price tag, when in reality, the price tag is zero.
Well, I know you've been particularly interested in the fate of the child tax credit, and that Washington Post editorial lamented that Democrats might expand the child tax credit for perhaps only a single year. But in doing that, they said, quote, a long-term expansion should take precedence over a federal pre-kindergarten program or expanded housing aid, close quote. We all know that choices have to be made, but I find that media sometimes just throw around this tough talk about what we have to jettison and what's in competition with what. And you're just indicating it in terms of cost, particularly when we're talking about family supporting measures. That invidiousness is just off base.
Yes, I think it is. I think it's very harmful. I think also the reality around the child tax credit, that is indeed a tax cut for middle-class families, but it also reaches 27 million children who were not receiving any of the tax credit or just partial tax credit. And that is what we call full refundability, and that has been made permanent. So that is a permanent benefit for the very poorest and low-income children among us, and that's huge. That will have lifelong effects for them. And because of Joe Manchin, the extensions were only able to go for a year without work requirements or means testing in a way that would have been extremely harmful. So what we've got is 1 year of an extension of the expansion of the child tax credit for everyone up through $150,000. The household, but we've got the full refundability is permanent. So those are really very important. And this bill is not what we had hoped. I think progressive movements would say we needed more like $10 trillion, which we could have paid for, because remember, the revenue raisers are permanent. And we easily could have paid for the $3.5 trillion, and we more than pay for this pared down $1.75 or $1.95. We have to look at it as a foot in the door, as a down payment, but one that is critical, one that will improve the lives, especially of poor and low-income children, and that can't be ignored.
Well, let's take a brief detour, because Joe Manchin did bring up this idea of work requirements, and I just wonder if we're ever going to retire that narrative. Can you speak briefly to that whole storyline?
Yes. Well, I think that this agreement, even as pared down as it is, has retired that temporarily.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So we live to fight another day. And that's why we only have 1 year of the extension of the full child tax credit expansion that we had under the American Rescue Plan. So that is without work requirements. It's completely baseless. There is no evidence and never has been that imposing a work requirement on receiving these benefits for the poorest children make any difference in terms of workforce participation. So that is many of the arguments that have been raised by, if not all, I would submit all of the arguments that have been posed by Manchin, obstructionist arguments, have no basis in reality. And he cannot produce credible research that points that he's correct, whereas there's much evidence that he is incorrect. So that's really, I think, where if the media insists on focusing on infighting among the Democratic Party, which I also don't think is helpful nor truthful, it's really all of the Democrats against Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Also, not one Republican is for helping the American people. That's also a message that gets lost. So talking about moderates versus progressives is not only unhelpful, it's untrue, and there's nothing moderate about Joe Manchin's position nor Kyrsten Sinema's position. They're both extreme outliers. When you look at the popularity of the proposals from the billionaire's tax to paid family leave, you know, you have upwards of 75-80% in some cases popularity among the voting public for these things, and some of them are bipartisan. So there's nothing moderate about the opposition. It's extreme, it's fringe, and it's two people and the entire Republican Party, which also is never mentioned.
Exactly. Well, extending that kind of distortion is when we hear media describe progressives who are holding the line and continuing to fight for measures that the public overwhelmingly supports, those people being described as holding the bill hostage.
Well, that's right. And they are not the people who are obstructing it. And keep in mind, the Congressional Progressive Caucus is about half of the Democratic Caucus. So about 100 members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And they're simply holding a principled position. There was a tacit agreement that both the physical infrastructure bill, the roads and bridges, and the so-called human infrastructure bill, the child care, the safety net, the hearing for our seniors, the home care for our seniors and disabled people, that these would all advance together. And they're simply trying to make sure that there is the best deal possible for the American people.
Well, finally, the process unfolding before our eyes might seem to some to reflect a kind of brokenness of the connection promised by a democratic society, that the will of the people would be reflected in public policy. Here we see elective representatives cutting away at this for what are being described as political reasons, and it makes it seem like a kind of funhouse mirror idea of how democracy should work. And I know that you think about the relationship of policymaking to social movements. It just seems critical to hold in mind right now that as important as electoral politics are and how we cannot cede the ground, they're not the only arena for action. We don't want people to say, oh, look how they're not doing what we elected them to do, therefore I step out of the whole process. We have to see that la lucha continua, you know, whatever happens this week.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think it's also when people really look at the bill and see how the Congressional Progressive Caucus isn't holding the line, or the entire Democratic Caucus, except for two members, isn't holding the line simply for political reasons and their own political ambitions. These numbers, these programs, these policies, as far as we've gotten, all come from social movements. It's from decades of social movements. We're not getting everything that we've fought for, but we're getting more than we've gotten in decades. And things like, although the reports are paid leave has been stripped out of the bill, the legislation hasn't been written. Mm-hmm. We still have power. People can still call their members of Congress. They can still tell their stories online. They can still do social media. It is we who push our elected representatives. It is social movements. It is getting out on the street. It is picking up the phone. That's why we've gotten where we've gotten. And what is in this bill is the result of social movements, and it's terrific. It is not everything it could have been or should have been, and we must build on it. But we can't walk away from what we have just spent decades of blood, sweat, and tears to get to this point.
We've been speaking with Karen Dolan, director of the Criminalization of Race and Poverty Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Thank you so much, Karen Dolan, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you, Janine. It's been my pleasure.
Gizmodo reports leaked documents from Facebook showing that the company's internal research found that people don't trust it, are confused by its rules on content moderation, and that, as the reporter puts it, nobody believed Facebook was motivated by anything but fat stacks of cash. This comports with revelations from whistleblower Frances Haugen, and even before that, that point to a company that worse than failed to stop the spread of disinformation, including around COVID-19 and the Stop the Steal movement behind the January 6th insurrection, that has a troubling record of targeted content removal abroad, including against Palestinians, we're learning, that enables products and features it knows are harmful to millions of young users, and for whom all of this crucially seems to be not a bug but a feature. The company's reported entertainment of a name change is unlikely to deflect the public, legislative, and regulatory scrutiny it now faces. But what that scrutiny will amount to concretely is still to be determined. Here to catch us up is Tim Carr. He's Senior Director of Strategy and Communications at Free Press. He joins us now by phone from New Jersey. Welcome back to Counterspin, Tim Carr.
Always great to be with you.
Well, before we talk about what we're learning and around, you know, what we're learning, I wonder if you would talk to us a bit about how we are coming to learn this stuff. Folks may have seen the Wall Street Journal publishing the Facebook files, but a number of people have been working on these whistleblower documents and on other materials. What do you think is meaningful about what's going on maybe behind the scenes here?
Well, this is a really remarkable series of events. And you mentioned we first started learning about the what are called Facebook papers and when the Wall Street Journal did a fairly extensive expose, a number of stories a couple of weeks ago. We also learned that there was a whistleblower involved who had also provided documents to Congress and to the SEC. We came to know that whistleblower when 60 Minutes did an expose and interviewed Frances Haugen. Congress then called her to testify, and there was a lot of news around that. And then there was a sort of second wave where a number of news outlets, including some pretty major names like the New York Times, Associated Press, CNN, started reporting stories. And it was really this sort of avalanche of stories that happened earlier this week and continues to this day. And what's happening here is that Frances Haugen has a pretty sophisticated PR operation. When she decided to come forward as a whistleblower, she received some support from Whistleblower Aid, which is a group that provides legal protection to whistleblowers, and also from PR agency. And the PR agency decided that not only were we going to provide these thousands of pages of documents to the Wall Street Journal, we want to make sure that the story remains in the headlines for weeks. So what they did was work with a consortium, 17 news outlets, and said, we're going to give you bits and pieces. And every day you're going to get a new bunch of documents, and then you can report on them. And they've created this structure by which they're slowly doling out chunks of these documents to this consortium with the plan that this will last for 6 weeks. So through the end of November, we will be seeing new daily news items provided through this structure that was created.
Trying to keep it from being a flash in the pan, like a one-day story.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really smart in certain ways, but I also know, having spoken to some of the reporters, that it's frustrating. A lot of them feel like they're being played like puppets.
Right.
That this PR firm working for Frances Haugen has kind of got them over a barrel. And there's been a lot of dissent within journalism about how this is structured, and some have gone so far to reject this deal and to go about their own reporting on these documents and on Facebook without having to be beholden to this process.
Well, it sounds like information that we just want to get out, and maybe as savvy as it might sound to kind of play into the way that we know reporters work, maybe they'll do it for 2 days and then drop it. At the same time, if it's information that's valuable to the public and meaningful, you just kind of want to get it out there, right?
Well, yes, it's incredibly valuable information. I mean, you know, Facebook's unofficial motto used to be move fast and break things. And we now know, because of these documents, that indeed Facebook has moved fast and broken things. But some of the things that they have broken include the lives of people in places like the Philippines and Myanmar and Ethiopia. Facebook has also moved fast and broken trust in our democratic institutions and emergency healthcare systems. They thought that they could hide these facts, and we owe it to this whistleblower to have brought a lot of this to the light. So it is important that we know these things. And I think, seriously, it has caused irreversible damage to Facebook, which is now called Meta, by the way. They just announced it.
Oh, boy.
In particular, I don't know that Mark Zuckerberg, the founder, and Sheryl Sandberg will outlast this. I think there's a lot of serious thinking out there about them having to step down as a result of this.
Well, we should note that we are very much in medias res with this. You know, things are changing around us in terms of there's an FTC lawsuit, there's the U.S. Attorney General, there's legislation going on. And no, I don't think that people are going to be tricked by a rebranding and not be able to follow who this is connected to. Well, you've run through some of the specific impacts that have been revealed in terms of pushing users to extremist groups, in terms of not checking disinformation, in terms of targeting ethnic minorities abroad. It's worth saying that sometimes this is kind of shuttled off as a social media issue as though it were not about real human beings. And one takeaway from these revelations is that communities of color, LGBTQ communities, they're really at risk based on campaigns of hate and harassment and violence that what we're learning is Facebook foments intentionally, as it were. I mean, at least doesn't stop once it's aware they're doing it.
Yes. And one of the more important things that we found through this process of expose is that Facebook doesn't devote moderating or AI filtering resources to languages that are spoken outside of the United States. For example, Arabic has 22 distinct dialects, and Facebook's AI or artificial intelligence can't really tell the difference. And if you're talking about COVID disinformation in Spanish, the AI is unable to determine whether that's a violation of Facebook's rules or not. So there's been this real failure when it comes to non-English disinformation that's spreading over the network. And it's not only a problem, as many of these reports have revealed, it's not only a problem in countries like India, in the Middle East, in North Africa, in Myanmar, Ethiopia, and elsewhere. It's a problem in the United States, where we have a number of diaspora communities who don't speak English and often rely on Facebook in their own languages as a source of news and information. And Facebook just hasn't dedicated the resources to vetting those languages. So we find that the spread of disinformation on COVID or on the 2020 election results, for example, is far worse in non-English speaking communities that use Facebook.
Well, I want to talk about what responses these revelations seem to call for and where they might come from. But I did want to note this New York Times piece with the kind of icky headline, "Facebook, Show Us the Mess," the point of which was that perhaps the public and Facebook would benefit if these kinds of rare, unvarnished glimpses, such as the Facebook files offer, into their workings weren't so rare. And the Times column says that that might make the company a little more trustworthy and understood. And that piece reminded me of a piece by Cynthia Koo of the Center on Privacy and Technology about the trap, if you will, of transparency as an end in itself.
Right.
When what we need is accountability. Don't show us the mess, fix it. I wonder if you would talk about what serious response is to the harms that have been revealed about Facebook, what that might look like.
Well, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and other Facebook executives have come before Congress for well over a year, multiple appearances. I think we've seen in a lot of those hearings that members of Congress were just incapable of talking about how to regulate, how to provide some sort of official oversight to prevent all of the harm that Facebook is causing. And so this process has helped advance that thinking. A lot of the interesting work that's being done in Congress is about looking at the business model, a model that puts engagement and growth before the health and welfare of a multiracial democracy, and to start questioning the way data is used, to start questioning how data is abused and used in discriminatory ways so that ads about job opportunities, for example, can be shared with white people but not with others. Facebook had the capacity to target ads in that way. It still does. And so there is a role not only for Congress to push for, as you say, transparency, but transparency is only a part of the picture. We need also to make sure that if data is being collected, that it's being used in a way that protects the civil rights of individuals and can't be used in discriminatory ways. The FTC also has the authority to conduct a rulemaking about how not just Facebook, but other social media platforms use data. And so we've been very involved in organizing support for action in Congress and at the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, to take on those actions, to provide, to launch those sorts of rulemaking proceedings so that we can create a stronger regulatory framework to prevent these types of abuses from happening again.
We've been speaking with Tim Carr. He's Senior Director of Strategy and Communications at Free Press. You can follow their work on Facebook and a range of other issues online at freepress.net. Thank you so much, Tim Carr, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks, Janine.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is brought to you by the Media Watch Group FAIR, based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find shows and transcripts on FAIR's website, fair.org. The website is also the place to subscribe to FAIR's newsletter Extra or to sign up for our Action Alert Network, or to show support for us if you're so inclined. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thank you for listening to Counterspin.
I'm Ella Harp, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control, and priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT. Word to your mother.
City, Pittsburgh.
My big sister Jenna's face turned bright red. She was just showing people online how to use a new cream. She still has the scars.
Real products are tested for safety. My brother's friend Billy had to jump off his motor scooter when it caught fire. He fell and got hit by a car. Blew his chances to play basketball in college.
Go for real.
Visit ncpc.org/goforreal. Brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
someone's gonna get it while you can.
got 9 bullets in it. 9 bullets in my roommate's gun. Roommate's gun got 9 bullets in it. Gonna find a use for every last one. For the love you chose to betray me, a real fine love wouldn't be true. For the man she betrayed with, nice enough fella she betrayed him too. Nice enough fella she betrayed him too. Roommate's gun got 9 bullets in it. 9 bullets in my roommate's gun. Roommate's gun got 9 bullets in it. Gonna find a use for every last one. For my boss man.
As a public service to the listeners of WRCT, we have compiled a short list of items you should not have in your possession at the present time. 1. A muscle car. 2. A Betamax. 3. Acid-washed anything. 4. A members-only jacket. 5. Stirrup pants. 6. Asbestos. 7. Hummelware. 8. Sweet and Low. 9. Copies of Dynetics or Megatrends. And 10. A radio not tuned to 88.3 FM. If you do have any of these items, WRCT suggests you get with the program.
Sky cracks open, the walls falling through the floor. Just as well to keep it, I get some game in store. You're with me now, we'll be again. Other points in between, and the cool, cool. Turn the day. What goes wrong, you're causing it. The drive, didn't want to turn that way, you're causing it. The drive, doesn't make a difference now, you're causing it. The drive, silence knows, can't drown hard. Happenstance is falling through the cracks each day. Too close now to change it. Whose goal is louder anyway? When in doubt, move on. No need to sort it out. You're with me now. We'll be again. Other points in between. I want to find the right side of you. Living right is easy. What goes wrong, you're causing it. The drive, didn't want to turn that way, you're causing it. The drive, doesn't make a difference now, you're causing it. The drive, silence knows, can't drown. What goes wrong, you're causing it. The drive, didn't want to turn that way, you're causing it. The drive, it doesn't make a difference now, you're causing it. The drive, silence knows, can't drown. Crimes you've done tonight.
on Sunday. Tell it to the judge on Sunday. Tell it to the judge on Sunday. Tell it, 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 tell it.
Cocaine and I shot my woman down. Went right home and I went to bed. I stuck that loving 44 beneath my head. Got up next morning and I grabbed my gun. I took a shot of cocaine and away I run. Made a good run, but I run too slow. They overtook me down in Juarez, Mexico. Laid in the hot joint, taking the pill. In walked the sheriff from Jericho Hill. He said, Willie Lee, your name is not Jack Brown. You're the dirty hack that shot your woman down. Yes, oh yes, my name is Willie Lee. If you've got a warrant, just read it to me. Shot her down.
cause she made me slow. I thought I was her daddy, but she had five more. Train and they took me back. Had no friend for to go my bail. They slapped my daughter carcass in that county jail. The next morning about a 9:30, I spied a sheriff coming down the line. He kinda coughed as he cleared his throat. He said, come on you dirty hack to the district court. Into the courtroom my trial began, where I was held by 12 honest men. Just before the jury started out, I saw that dirty judge commence to look about. About 5 minutes in walked a man, holding the verdict in his right hand. The verdict read in the first degree. I hollered, Lordy, Lordy, have mercy on me. The judge smiled as he picked up his pen. 99 years in the Folsom State Pen. 99 years underneath that ground. I can't forget today I shut that bad bitch down. Come on, you gotta listen on to me. Lay off that whiskey and let that cocaine be. Sweet.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for kids, teens, or young adults. It's just not.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals and volatile organic compounds into your body.
And nicotine, the same highly addictive substance found in regular cigarettes.
Nicotine can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
Affecting learning, memory, attention, and impulse control. And priming the brain for other addictions.
Vaping products also come in kid-friendly flavors that can make them appealing to youth.
And many kids also use other drugs, like marijuana, in vaping devices.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media,
many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
What is dedication?
My daughter started making necklaces. She makes what we call affirmation fashion. I tell her every day that your black is beautiful. And if there's anything better than being beautiful, it's being smart. And if there's anything better than being smart, it's being kind. And reaffirming that every day is our method of making sure her chin never drops.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hey, Pittsburgh, this is Eric Harrison coming to you with a heart full of gratitude on WRCT Pittsburgh. Rock on, Yinzers.
WRCT proudly presents Anatomy of the Ear from Friday, November 12th through Sunday, November 14th. All weekend, tune in for hour-long specials of the genres you love, mixed with ones you never knew you were missing. Our DJs are coming together to showcase the unique variety that WRCT has to offer. from footwork and cheerful Americana to dark wave and the Bakersfield sound. More information and a schedule will be posted at WRCT's website, wrct.org. Don't miss it! Tartan Inc. joins you in supporting WRCT. Tartan Inc. is a full-service copy print shop conveniently located in the university's Cohone Center on the Carnegie Mellon campus. Services provided by the Copy Center include black and white and color copies, single and double-sided copying, an assortment of colored and textured papers, including cover stock, specialty papers such as gloss paper, resume quality paper, as well as large format poster paper. They also offer binding and finishing options that include cutting, lamination, folding, padding, stapling, tape binding, thermal binding, collating, comb binding, and coil binding, as well as being an authorized ship and drop-off site for UPS shipping. For more info, visit their website at www.cmu.edu/tartaninc or call 412-268-4828. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, please email pr@wrct.org for more info about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Counterspin provides a critical examination of the major stories every week and exposes what corporate media might have missed in their own coverage. Counterspin highlights censored stories and exposes biased and inaccurate coverage while examining the power of corporate influence and sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, Wednesdays, 10 to 10:30 a.m., right here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, it's the Mockster from WRCT's own Friday night extravaganza, Viva La Mock, reminding you that you're listening to Whiskey Before Breakfast with my good friend, Mando Richard. But then again, unless you're a first-time listener, you probably already knew what you're listening to, right? Huh? Right? And if not, maybe, just maybe, you've had a little too much whiskey before breakfast, if you know what I mean.
Everybody ready?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 2144 of Whiskey Before Breakfast on WRCT Pittsburgh, WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark, Delaware, WUTC and WUTC HD1 Chattanooga, Tennessee, WKYWLP Kaiser, West Virginia, or Tube City Online Radio from McKeesport, Pennsylvania at WMCK.FM. I'm your host, Mando Richard, and I've got a wild ride for you as usual today. We'll start off with a liquored up set of music like we always do, and we'll close down with a gospel set like we always do, and in between, we've got a tribute to Sonny Osborne and lots of other great music to keep you entertained. Let's start off with a track from the new record Emmylou Harris and the Nash Ramblers' Ramble in Music City, The Lost Concert. It was just released on Nonesuch. The concert was recorded in Nashville in 1989. And Emmylou and the Nash Ramblers are going to sing.